you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. Really interesting episode this week. We have Linda Perry, formerly of the Four Non Blondes, who had that mega hit, What's Going On? You know, What's Up? It was, And Then I Cry Sometimes When I'm Lying in Bed. I think you know that song. She comes on. She ended up writing hits for people like Pink, Adele, Gwen Stefani, Alicia Keys, and she's in the Songwriters Hall of Fame. If you're someone that's ever wanted to delve down that road, this is the woman and the episode to listen to. Bill Schultz filled in for Big J Okerson this week. Remember, we do the show every single Wednesday and Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, live at GasDigitalNetwork.com. Or you wait 5 days and you listen to it now with commercials and only the newest 20 episodes. If you hit GasDigitalNetwork.com on Memorial Day weekend, which is Friday to Monday, and use the code SDR30, you will get a 30-day free trial instead of the normal 7 to really delve deep into the archives and see if the premium subscription is for you. You'll save 20% as well. Or just listen 5 days later. That's fine. We just want you to spread the love. That's all we care about. Go to YouTube. Listen however you're listening right now. Whatever you want, just get the word out for the SDR Show. Bill Schultz, as I said, fills in for Big J. And here it is right now, the Linda Perry episode of the SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's weed, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, it is Bill Schultz. Thank you, dude. I think now maybe your fifth, sixth time co-hosting with me. It makes me happy that you're here. Because I know, Bill, you, unlike a lot of other people in my life that come on the show, you will do research, so I appreciate it.
You can take the guy out of print journalism, and then you can destroy my entire field. I think that's how it goes, yeah?
That is
yeah.
Mine, but at least it's good to know that you're going to come prepped, and that makes me happy. Both Thanks, Shannon and Ani have their cameras off for various reasons, but that we will not get into. But right now, let's say this. Singer, songwriter, musician, record producer, inducted in the Songwriter Hall of Fame, which I didn't even know that was a thing, but that's cool as shit. Four-time Grammy nominated and former lead singer of the Four Non Blondes. It is Linda Perry. How are you, Linda Perry?
I'm quite well. Thank you very much for asking. And thanks for inviting me to your show.
I have to say, right off the bat, your background is very ominous. You got instruments, a big mixing board. Like, I could not design a more fitting backdrop for you.
I'm a producer. And
that's what it looks like. It looks really powerful. It looks really important.
I am powerful. Hello.
Well, Linda, is not your studio also your home, right?
No. Oh, God, no. I would never.
I've already screwed up on my research. I thought you had a couple. I thought like it was one and two, but one and the same.
No. So I have a studio that's in a home, but it's not my home. It's a house. It's a house that I bought, and I used to live here a long time ago. But I turned it and I rented it to friends. And then I had a big studio in North Hollywood. And when my son showed up, I was like, I got to simplify life. And right. So I sold that studio. And then I was like, oh, I'll turn that house that I am never at into a home, a studio. So it is a house, but it's a studio.
It's not your house.
No okay, so he got it.
The way I would describe this is Bill did 40% or 50% of the research and then decided to stop right there.
I'm a little let down on that research because I heard...
Like, I research, but I have the reading level of a third grader. So take that.
And no follow through. That's the other thing. He has no follow through. He read Studio in a Home and he's like, I got the rest of this. We're good. All right. So I want to get into, obviously, there is the new score.
Is that a lager you were drinking just now?
It's a Guinness, although my last name's Schultz.
You know what, by the way, speaking of Guinness, not to go off topic so early, I learned this yesterday and feel like I'm an idiot for not knowing this my whole life. the Guinness Book of World Records is from Guinness beer. And yes. I never put that together.
I didn't know.
I was embarrassed to find that out only a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I was like, how the fuck did I not know that? That seems so obvious now. It really bothers me that I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to go back, and then we'll get up to, you know, the Kid 90 soundtrack and the letter, which I watched that. I think it's already at over 1 million views on YouTube, so kudos to that. And
really, I mean, good.
Just a lot of interesting things. I always like when this happens, when I do my research for somebody and you find out so many different things. You're like, well, oh shit, well, that's interesting. That's cool. So I'm just going to touch on a few things. I'm sure Bill will as well. And we'll just kind of be dancing all over the place, if you don't mind. We'll start with, obviously, the story that I heard that was the reason why Four Non Blondes did not work out for you. The story I heard, you were opening for Pearl Jam, Van Morrison, and Neil Young.
Oh,
and yeah. There's a, I don't know, you said, let's say 20,000 people. I don't remember how many thousands of people were in the 80, concert. 000.
80,000.
I'm at 80,000, excuse me. And there was one person that didn't look happy, and that's the person you focus on, and that's when you realize, oh, this is not for me. Am I right with that?
Kind of. It's a little out of context, but it was one of the ongoing things that was happening in my life during that time. And, you know, with Four Non Blondes, I was... you know, I joined that band, mm-hmm. And at first I didn't bring my songs in because I was into myself. I was into my solo career. I was showing up on an acoustic guitar at clubs. People were totally digging me, and I was already building my name around San Francisco. So, but then I was like, oh yeah, I'll join this band. That looks fun for a moment, you know, whatever. And then, so I did. And then, but I just sang their songs. And then I started bringing my songs in because I was like, you know, maybe I can marry the two somehow. And then what ended up happening is when we were making the record, it just didn't sound like what we sounded like. It sounded really polished. It sounded clean. And then that just started off, you know, just a series of emotional upsets for me. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point where, yes, you know, every time I would perform, I focused on all the people not paying attention. And I know this is very common for an artist to do, but I think it was because we were getting mixed reviews and people didn't think like the way I looked was my look. It was put together. And I'm like, who else is going to walk around in pajamas, oversized hats, dreadlocks? Who would put that craziness together? It's just the way I looked, you know. I was, you know, obviously I like hats, you know. So it just all started piling on me. And then I started overly being sensitive, and it was just hurting. It was hurting to hear someone say something negative. It was hurting to hear someone didn't like a song. It was hurting me too much when we would get negative, you know, reviews. And then looking out in the audience and seeing people just kind of like, wait, when's Pearl Jam coming on? You know, it's like, it was just like daggers just constantly hitting me. And I just broke. And I was like, I can't do it. I'm not cut out for this business. I'm not cut out to be in front of the spotlight.
Right.
It just doesn't fit me because this is not powerful to me and I need to be powerful. And this is position is not a powerful position.
But the question I would ask would be, do you think you would have had that same reaction if the entire thing, instead of you joining Four Non Blondes, it was, let's just say, call it the Linda Perry Project, and it was all you, and there was no other people, like it was your image, your feeling, your vibe. Do you think you would have had the same reaction?
If you want me to be totally honest, no one's ever asked me this question, so I will answer it with as much honesty as I possibly can. I believe I would be one of the biggest artists in the world and would be like considered this huge legacy artist if I would have just stayed with my solo career.
Love
because
it.
I had control of that.
Right.
I didn't have control of Four Non Blondes. It was, you know, it was a democracy. You know, it was like, okay, who wants this producer? You know, and then I'd be outvoted, you know,
right.
And it was just like, you know, so everything was not in my control. Every word I said, I had to be mindful of how the other, you know, you know, bandmates were feeling. So it was just like, and I'm an Aries, man. I need control. I am a workaholic. I do good work, you know, and when I'm focused, I can make big things happen. And I just started losing my faith in myself. And I started just being like, oh, God, I hate being here. Right, and not because the music was bad or anything. It's just, it didn't spiritually fit my needs.
Right. I get that. And it's also amazing when you, like I heard on, I think it was on the Larry King interview that you wrote your first song when you were five, which is just, you were somebody that was born to write music.
Really a song.
But whatever it is, I wasn't writing music when I was five. Not to brag, Larry King mentioned my network once. You did a full hour interview. So sort of the same thing. I don't know. But, it is,
rest in peace, Larry. I mean, let me just tell you, since you brought him up, the nicest, like when you get people in your corner and that just want to see you win and support mm-hmm. you, it's such a beautiful thing. And Larry was so kind to me. He loved how honest I was. Like, I mean, he'd laugh all the time, but he was such a sweet, kind man to me and made me feel important, made me feel like I was making good decisions. And I just loved him for that. And it was sad to, you know, when he passed.
Bill, in your time in working in that side of the business, did you ever meet Larry?
I did several times. He was the moderator for the Libertarian presidential, it was a bunch of libertarians running for president. I covered it in Chicago. And he was the moderator. And, you know, Larry famously, I love Larry King, but Larry famously was not a big believer in research. He just felt, and his reason behind this would
kinda
be
like Ralph.
And my favorite question of my favorite Larry King question of all time is he had Pamela Anderson on one time and he looks at her and he is dead serious. So have you had any plastic surgery? And she's sitting there farther away from him because of boobs and just sort of looks at him like, are you kidding me? And he just,
well, there's that clip that went viral a few years ago when he asked Jerry Seinfeld something about how big his show was. He's like, do you not know who I am, Larry? That was great.
He asked Seinfeld when he got canceled.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite moments. So then I know at one point there was a second Four Non Blondes album that you started writing and then you kind of parted ways. Did those songs ever resurface anywhere or never?
Never.
No. They'll never be heard again.
So it would be like, I mean, it was just so hard for me to even attempt to do a second record. And so I would come in, you know, I'll just grab this guitar, but I'd come in and I'd be like, you know, I know the place to say come to. I'm just making something up right now. Mm-hmm. And I'd just be, everybody wants to feel my pain. You know, that's where I was. I was in this very depressed. I wanted to make Dark Side of the Moon, man. I wanted to get like low. Mm-hmm. I wanted to sink deep like your voice, Ralph. And I wanted to just feel something. And I wanted people to smoke a joint, you know, or smoke a cigarette or drink some wine and just sit there with the lights off and put headphones on. That's what I wanted. No, nobody else wanted that but me. And it would be like, can't you just write a song like, you know, a little more up-tempo and blah, blah, blah. And then I would go and I'd be so like, oh my God, I'd go away, come back like 10 minutes later, bang, 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 bang. She wants my fucking mind, blah, 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 you know, and then perfect. And I'm like going, are you fucking kidding me? Sorry, can I swear?
Yeah, of course you can, yes.
I'm like, are you kidding me?
And why did you ask me if you could curse and then you didn't?
And then
curse.
I don't. But then, because I already said it, then it would sound like I was purposely saying it again. I got to be organic and real here. So I was like, holy shit, how the hell am I going to get out of this thing? There's no way I can't do it. And so, yeah, then I left.
And it was no like messy. It seemed like I was watching the behind the music as well, because I do research. It didn't seem like, at least based on what you see, of course, everything's edited for television, that there's any real animosity, at least at this point, with the rest of the guys in Four Non Blondes. It seems to be.
Oh my God, they hated me. They hated
at the time.
Me.
I'm sure at the time.
I ruined their life. You know, like Don, the drummer, was like, "You're ruining my life." You know, and I get it. You know, I get it. Like we were fucking huge. Like we sold 7-8 million records, and the world knew who we were. And our second record, although I hated it, there was some really great hit songs on there. The label was super happy about it. And so we were probably going to have a very successful second record. So I get it. I get it. I get it. Like, oh my God, the singer is pulling out. There is no band without right. Linda Perry, you
right.
know,
so
there
sure.
was no saving it. There's, you know, and I actually tried to, I said, hey, you guys can have all the songs. I'll find a singer. I'll teach them how to sing like me. I'll help, you know, just continue. And then the label was like, no. And they dropped the band and they
oh,
kept
wow.
me.
Yeah. So there's
and
the
I was
end
like,
of that.
No, that's not, that wasn't the plan. The plan was, you're going to drop me and you're going to keep the band. And I was going, they're like, why would we do that?
That's great.
Why
that's really
would
crazy.
We drop you? You know, the singer, the person who writes the songs, why would we drop you and keep these guys?
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Last question, I don't want to spend too much more time on Four Non Blondes, but when you joined, because they were a pre-existing band, were there any songs on the table already, or they just scrapped everything and you took over? Like, how did that transition happen?
When I first joined, they had songs.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the three of them. It was Wanda, Shauna, and Krista. And they had these like kind of country punk songs, like, you know, and I was like, okay, this is fun. So I'd mm-hmm. you know, run around drunk and, you know, singing these songs. But it just wasn't, it wasn't fulfilling me. Then once I realized they're actually a good they're good musicians, I started bringing my songs in. And
oh,
then
okay.
we got signed.
That's pretty wild. That's pretty wild. And then again, you know, you do your research. Things could be right. Things could be wrong. Who the hell knows? But then there was like a period of time where you were trying to figure out what path you were going to go. And is it true that Pink was calling you every day and harassing you until you finally agreed to say, okay, let's do something? Is that right?
No.
All right. I apologize.
No. Oh, ah. Close.
All right. Close. I'll take close. Bill and I both got close so far.
The story is I was really fascinated with all the to me, the very disposable music that was on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out what is that sound? So somebody's like, oh, yeah, that sound. It's an MPC. It's a Triton. It's a blah, blah, blah. So I went and bought all that gear. And I'm saying, you know, I'm analog. All my shit's analog. So I got all these, like, you know, things that people use. And I started, you know, playing, figuring out what everything does. And then literally 30 minutes later, I had Get the Party Started. Mm-hmm. And then right after that, about a week later, this girl calls me and I'm hearing this message like, hey, this is Pink. You know, I'm looking for Linda Perry. You know, is this the girl that sings Dear Mr. President and What's Up? You know, I stole your phone number from my makeup artist, you know, telephone. And if I can steal your number, I can get your address and I'm going to come, you know, visit you every day if you don't, you know, call me back. And I'm like, who the fuck is Pink? You know, and then.
Great.
Literally that day, I see this bling, bling, ching, ching girl with pink hair, white girl singing R&B. And I'm like, I called her and I said, hey, is this Pink? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, this is Linda Perry, but I think you had the wrong Linda Perry because I'm not hip at all. So that's how that started. And then that basically I gave her Get the Party Started. And then that's when my producer songwriter started right there.
You did an interesting thing I never really heard of, which is where you just sort of cornered Pink and made her bring over all her CDs.
Oh, yeah.
And you looked, yeah, you looked at all of her CDs. You're like, you're not seeing any of it. Yeah, that see? There you go, Ralph.
Because
but, like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I wonder, like, okay, so, like, and then you got the best out of her via that. And certainly you legendarily did with Christina Aguilera. But like, how do you when you are working with an artist that are, you work with very different artists, like, how do you shape the situation and then sort of figure out how to work with them? So like, say someone like Pink versus someone like Courtney Love, who is just sort of a force of nature. Like, I got to assume there's a lot of bobbing and weaving that goes on there via the different
artists.
There is.
I mean, I think too, like someone like Pink, what was confusing me was that I didn't believe the R&B part of her. So I asked her one day, I said, hey, can you do me a favor and just bring me your CD collection? You know, yeah, that CD. So she brought her CD collection the next day. Bruce Springsteen, Joan Jett, Heart, Patti Smith, Stevie Wonder, Mariah Carey. And I'm like going, and then Billy Joel. And I'm like, I'm confused. Like, you know, Nirvana, you know, I'm like, I'm really confused. Like, you have all this incredible music in here, but you're singing this white girl R&B stuff. And then she's like, well, I don't want to be doing that. So then from there, once I was like, okay, I get it. So then it was ad lib from there. I was just like coming up with music, and then I made her ad lib, and she's like, what's ad libbing? I'm like, that means I just want to hear your feelings. I don't want you to think about it. I want you to close your eyes. Just come out. Just make it up. Make up the melody, make up the words, just say whatever's on your mind. And that's basically how we made her record.
That's great. Were there ever people that you were working with that you were enthusiastic about? You don't have to name names, but once you start working with them, you realize, oh yeah, this is not going to work out for me.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Oh yeah. Yes. Oh, that's funny.
You know, I have a lot of that because first of all, it's trickery out there. I have everybody sing in person. You come in here. If I'm interested at all, I need to hear you live. Because okay. I do not believe what I hear on those speakers.
Well, that takes me out of the mix right away.
So when I do that, I get a very clear understanding of who is in it, you know, for the long haul, and who's just going to be. And hey, listen, I'm not going to lie. I probably passed on some very, very big. I have passed on some very big artists that are big right now, but that's not how I operate. You know, right. If it doesn't, you know, sit with me and I don't feel like there's an emotional intention involved, I just can't do it. I wish, oh my God, I'd be a whole other, you know, story with me right now. I wish I could be that superficial, money-grabbing producer that really doesn't give a shit what crap they're putting out there, right, as long as it's going to make money.
Well, I could pretend to like Bill for an hour pretty easily. I do that almost, you know, once a month.
My audio's still on. I can hear all.
The thing is, I'm a terrible liar. Like, I can't. Like, I'm uncomfortable, you know, like, I'm so honest, it's uncomfortable. Like, I'm that person in the room where you're like going, no, she did not. No, don't
That's
do
great.
It. Oh my God, she just did it. You know, like, it's so
bad. Then answer me, because I know you said this in an interview, and this I can remember almost verbatim, that what you like about being the songwriter is that if the song doesn't become a hit, you can say, oh, well, it's because so-and-so sang it, and that's why it wasn't a hit. It had nothing to do with the song. So saying that, is there any songs that you wrote recently that we would know you could not believe, well, that didn't become a hit? Like, I'm shocked. I thought for sure that was a home run and it didn't become a home run.
One day I'm going to basically release that record. And because I feel like I have a whole album of hits that didn't fly for several reasons.
Right.
One, maybe my production was off. Two, the artist went a completely different direction. I mean, I have records sitting in this, my system, where big artists, you know, we were in the middle of something really cool, really original, and they completely took a about face when, you know, another record dropped and they wanted to sound like that.
Right. And chasing a sound, like, as opposed to having a sound, which never understood
the sound.
That.
I'm like, dude, why are you going to go chase that? It just came out. Why are you going to go try to make that record? It just came out and it's a hit for that artist. Like, you're doing that right now. You're doing that. You're making that exact record, but your version of it, because it's real. It's inventive. It's, you know, it's like, you know, authentic to who you are right now. Anyways, I have a lot of those. Really funny. Like, I don't get it. Like, abandoned ship in the middle of being very original and cool because they're afraid.
Right.
Artists are afraid.
There's a guy
You're known for getting authenticity out of people, and you're known for tough love and all that, but you're also talking about some of the most highly sensitive people on planet Earth. I mean, has it ever gone really wrong where you were just sort of like trying to get the best out of someone and telling them how it is, and it was not received the way you had hoped it would be?
No, I feel like I've been, I mean, I've had people walk out and then come back 6 months later and go, I just couldn't. You just tapped on some shit I just wasn't ready to deal with, you know? And I do. Like, I don't know how I do it. To be honest, it's not like I'm like going, okay, there they are. That look in their eye. This is when I'm going for the kill. You know, like I just, all I do is talk to them. There's something about me, probably my honesty, my raw energy. And I feel like there's a thing about me and people tell me things that they don't tell other people. And you know, and it's very personal. It's very vulnerable. And I make people feel safe too. That's the other thing we got to remember. It's like a lot of artists don't feel safe in their environment with producers. It feels like, okay, I'm just going to go in here and just do what I'm supposed to do. Like there's nobody, you know, they just want to get their job done because, oh, you know, because I'm sure you guys are amazing, but guys are dickheads. You know, you go into
No, we're dickheads.
You go into a room filled with egos, patting each other on the butt, say, hey, and then the girl, the artist that you're, you know, supposed to be working with now becomes a tool, an object. You know, not much, you know, to say. That happens. That happens. These girls go in these rooms with these fucking dickheads acting like they're big shit because they had, you know, five number ones. Who fucking gives
a shit?
But
let me ask you this, Linda, in my defense, what if I just know better than everybody else?
You know how I would know that was true? Because there would be no ego and you would lift.
Oh, I agree with that. I say that any guy that's ever said I'm an alpha male is not an alpha male because you wouldn't have to tell me.
But leaders, exactly. Leaders, you know, that are smart and powerful lead.
Right. You know, I agree with you.
They lead by lifting other people. They lead by putting people together to protect their fortress. You know, the people that have to say, I'm this, I'm that, that hang their gold records on the wall, talk about all their hits, those guys are insecure.
Yeah.
And they are not leaders.
I mean, just like you could pretty much guarantee anybody that starts a sentence with, I'm not racist, but. You know that that person is racist. End of story. There's no more. You don't need to say anything else. You've already proved your point. Let me ask you this. I don't want you to talk shit about someone, but when you, especially because I think you both worked with Pink, and when you talk about like hit maker dudes, I kind of know this guy for years. And I'm curious, and you feel free to not say anything. Do you know Butch Walker? Are you friends with him know him?
I love Butch. Yeah.
Because Butch is, such a talented producer, but does write that very hit-friendly, poppy fun lyrics vibe. More, I think, better than most, in my opinion.
Yeah, Butch is great. I actually was just on a panel with him talking about Cheap Trick yesterday. And, you know, the thing about Butch, he's actually a musician.
Yeah.
He understands the art. He understands what drums are supposed to do, guitar, bass. Most of those producers out there don't even play an instrument. They're just putting these teams together and like, okay, let's just play for 100 hours. And right there, there's my loop. You know, and you know, Butch is approaching it from a songwriter point of view,
right?
And that's why he's awesome, because he writes songs. How am I going to produce this? He's not saying that first. He's writing the song first and then figuring out what it's going to sound like.
The one thing I found about him, because I thought the second Marvelous 3 album, Ready, Sex, Go, was one of the best like rock records. It didn't do well, but I love that record. He's had so many more hits with other people than he's ever had for himself. You left for a different reason. He, I think, still wanted to become a rock star forever. That never quite happened. He just does better producing other people for whatever reason, because he's good looking, talented, could sing. It's who the fuck knows why that never happened. Anyway, to move on a little bit further here, a couple of other questions. Then I want to get into what's going on right now. So you said in the interview when you gave Christina Aguilera Beautiful, she said, don't look at me. Did she add that line or that was already in there?
No. So what happened was I had to really emotionally debate, you know, whether I was going to give such a personal song to someone.
Because that was your song originally for you, originally. Right.
Just a song of mine. Yeah. You know, I would never imagine someone like Christina because I didn't quite understand the song yet. Sometimes I write a song and it's not clear to me what it is. You know, I battle because I just write whatever it's telling me to write. Like these songs for me, they're not coming from me. I'm channeling something else. So sometimes a song comes and I don't know what the lyrics mean at all. And so Beautiful, I was confused because I didn't believe I was beautiful. I didn't understand it yet what I was writing about. All I heard is I am beautiful. And that freaked me out because I'm like, I don't think that. So when Christina wanted to do it, I'm like thinking, you are a hot chick. You can't sing this song. No way. You know, you can't sing a song like this. But then I was just like, okay, well, you know, my manager at the time said, why don't you just let her sing it and see how it comes and mm-hmm. make your decision then. I'm like, okay, good idea. So then she came to my studio and I never let managers, groupies, followers, whatever you call those people, you know, your posses into the studio. And that never mm-hmm. happened. But that day, Christina said, can I bring my friend? Because I'm just nervous. I'm like, yeah, okay, it's okay. So her friend was sitting down on the couch. Christina's like here. I'm over here. And the song starts and she's, you know, you just hear this. And she looks at her friend and says, don't look at me. And she said it like, don't look at me while I'm singing.
Right.
You know, while she's this is happening in the background of that take, by the way, it's her original take. So when she said that, I was like, oh, she doesn't think she's beautiful. She's an insecure hot chick. You know, mm-hmm. I get it. Yes, it makes sense now. And then I knew the song was hers.
But then my question is, did she get writer's credit for adding that line to the song?
No, because it wasn't a line. It was just her
saying. Yeah, it was an anthem.
She was just saying something to somebody saying, don't look at me. It wasn't, I'm right.
I know, but it did make it into the song. I don't know how that works. What the fuck do I know?
Well, it made it into the song because it was something she said. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to keep that because it sounded very vulnerable.
All right. Before we go any further, this is one of our long-term sponsors. So happy they're still a part of the show. We're talking about Blue Chew. You know, when we say Blue Chew, it's all about chewing it and doing it. It is basically the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew's tablets help make achieve harder, stronger erections to combat all forms of ED, or as I like to call it, ED. You know what I'm saying. That is erectile dysfunction. They are chewable. Can we say tablets? Did I just say it? Sorry. They are chewable tablets available as an online prescription service. No doctor needed. No awkward, weird conversation. They just show up at your door. You don't have to wait online at the pharmacy asking for someone to give you a price check on dick pills. It is just simply using BlueChew.com. So you go to BlueChew.com and use the code SDR. You get your first month free and you just pay the $5 shipping and you are supporting the people that are supporting us. That's not only is that a good thing, but you're also going to be helping your love life. You don't like to swallow pills, no big deal. It is Blue Chew. It has the sildenafil and the tadalafil, and it is going to make you and your lover very happy. All right, let's get back into it.
All right, so now being that you are someone that takes music so personal, is there music that you love that people would be shocked because it's so disposable or silly or whatever that your secret loves of music that people be, oh my God, I can't believe Linda Perry loves Milli Vanilli or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like I've been pretty transparent with all the styles of music. I mean, I've said that I've loved the Jungle Book, you know, I love the Carpenters. I love listening to Brazilian music. And I mean, I listen to everything. There's nothing would be shocking of me to say because everything I'm influenced by, like I just love music. And I'm impressed every time I hear, you know, something, you know, that just feels emotional to me. When I was talking to Cheap Trick yesterday about, you know, live at Budokan, you know, like, Surrender during a very dark time in my life, it just gave me like this power, you know, like, yes, yes, fuck the system, you know, and it was that anthem for kids. And so I actively seek that feeling. And it could come from polka. It could come from reggae. It could come from jazz. It could come from anywhere. I don't care. I just love searching for the emotion of feel good.
Well, the Brazilian thing makes sense. I mean, your mom's Brazilian, your dad's Portuguese. Your dad was Portuguese, right?
My father's from Portugal. Yeah.
And
from Brazil.
And so, like, I saw something today that you had said that when they had moved here, that your mom did not speak a word of English.
Your dad had not taught her that.
Was it one of those things where, like, he didn't want her to speak English because he had that had some sort of control over her then, that she wouldn't leave him or anything like that?
You know,
I thought that was very strange.
Yeah, it's the 60s. My mom was very beautiful, is very beautiful. She's 88 now, and, you know, but she definitely had that Sophia Loren, you know, very ethnic, Latino, beautiful, like beautiful, stunning model, you know. And my father, he was a good looking guy, but, you know, short, a little pudgy, you know, charming. And I believe that he, you know, brought my mom here and, you know, made her a token, you know, trophy wife. And he did not, you know, my father believed in America, and, you know, in America, women are in the kitchen barefoot. Like, it's like he became this American because they read about it, because back in the 60s, it was not cool to be an immigrant, you know. And so, you know, my father took on everything American and what American males do. They watch Archie Bunker, and their women sit in the kitchen and they make dinner. They bring them beer. They have babies, you know, and it's just like that's what my mom got turned into. So forbid her to speak English so she could talk back to me. No way. This gives me control, because the truth is my father was a wimp, you know. And so my mom learned via TV, through our homework. And my mom, my father's a engineer, he's passed away, but he was an engineer, and my mom outwitted and outsmart my father, you know, and with all his college and stupid army shit, you know, that he'd always brag about, my mother ended up being extremely smart and a survivor, and completely topped him.
Do you speak Portuguese at all?
Unfortunately, no, because my father forbidded it in the house. So
I learned one phrase, which is parabéns, means congratulations, because I had to give a best man speech a few years ago, and the wife was Brazilian. So I learned that for half the audience to say congratulations. That was my big contribution to the Portuguese family there.
Amazing.
So now we move to the main reason why you're here, the Kid 90.
I forgot. Why am I here?
The Kid 90, Doc. I'm going to fuck up. It's Soleil. I always hear your first name wrong. Soleil?
Soleil Moonfry? No,
don't say it. Go ahead. Do it again.
Soleil? Is it Soleil Moonfry?
It's Soleil Moonfry.
I always said there's an extra L in there. It always looked weird to me.
It's Soleil.
Okay, so first of all, did you meet Soleil through your ex-wife, Sarah, because they grew up around the same time?
I did.
Look at me figuring that out.
Oh, she's in the documentary. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I met Soleil through Sarah, and Soleil came to me one day and said, you know, I've been working on this documentary and I'd love for you to look at it, and maybe you want to be music supervisor. And when I watched it, I was like, I don't want to be music supervisor. Can I score it? And it's something I wanted to start getting into. I put it out into the universe that I wanted to stop working with artists that have no direction or creativity, and, you know, and are wimps, and start working with people. You know, I wanted to do film and TV and start scoring. So universe heard me, brought me Soleil. And so I said, can I score? And she's like, yeah. And basically that's how that happened.
And now that led to you writing your first, I guess, official release as an artist in, I don't know how many years. I think I read 12 years or 13 years. I could be wrong on that.
No, it's like almost 20 years.
Wow, 20 years. And it's called The Letter, based on a letter that she found that she wrote to herself when she was a kid. Coincidentally, my brother did this. When he was 12, he wrote a letter and wrote, I have a twin brother, and he wrote, don't open till you're 40. and he kept it with him from 12 to 40. He never showed it to me, but that's kind of cool. Sort of wow. The same thing. I guess it's more common than you realize, and it's a nice thing to do. And that led to you releasing the video. And in the video, you see, like, superimposed in the background, the actual letter is in there.
Yeah, so the whole movie is based on footage that Soleil filmed when she was 14, 15 years old after, you know, Punky Brewster. And all her friends in the film are Leonardo DiCaprio, Sarah Gilbert, Jenny Lewis. All
it's insane.
Kids, the kids from 90210, Andrew Dorr, mm-hmm. Stephen Dorff, you know, Robin Thicke. I mean, it's crazy, it's all crazy. The people in the movie. And this is just her, you know, deciding I'm going to start, documenting my childhood. And I mean, the first original IG story, I mean, the first.
No kidding.
You know what I mean?
It's really crazy.
And the movie is great because it's all staticky and weird and the sound is off, but you don't really care because you're watching this story about this girl who's trying to evolve into something after leaving this, you know, America's sweetheart kid, Punky Brewster, really was having sex, being, you know, was, you know, raped, you know, kids committed suicide. She was doing mushrooms. You know, she was not saying no to drugs, even though she was a spokesperson with, you know, what's her name, Bush?
Nancy Reagan.
You know, or Nancy Reagan. And, you know, so it was interesting watching this. And then, yes, of course, she wrote herself a letter. So when I saw that piece, I just came up with the song and then we turned it into, so I just turned it into a full song. And then, yes, made a video. The director, Don Hardy, that directed this movie, Citizen Penn, that I also scored. He filmed it for me because he's so awesome. And he, you know, put the screen or just projected the movie on me. And then it was just a vulnerable time for me because, you know, I don't do that. I'm not getting in, you know, I'm not doing videos. I'm not releasing songs, but
do more of it.
About it. I felt good about it because it was such a beautiful song and I didn't mind. I thought to myself, if Soleil can expose herself like this, I feel like I can go ahead and just expose myself and how vulnerable I am. And so, you know, I painted the warrior, you know, face thinking that was going to help me be stronger. And then, you know, I believe I said somebody in an interview that it actually made me feel weaker and more vulnerable. And it was just like a nightmare for me. But I was just like, fuck it. I'm just going to do it.
The fact that it has over a million views, the fact that it's getting so well received, does it at all ignite your fire to start getting in front of the mic again and going out there or no?
You know, Ralph, I wish I could say so, but the truth is I am no way being, you know, jaded when I say this, but a million views today is like a dollar. You know what I mean?
It's like, no, it's probably about,
you know,
$200, I think.
Yeah, but I don't mean it. And I don't mean it in money. I'm just saying,
yeah,
you know, the numbers are so crazy right now. It's like, you know, it's so if there were like 14 million hits, I would be like, okay. But a million, you just don't know where those come from. It's like so weird how we're judging success right now on these friggin' numbers, you know, followers and this and that, and they're not real.
Right. Like, and they also are really not only not real, it's like, and I forget who this quote is from, but someone said it's better to have 1,000 people that will always buy your music than millions of people online that really don't give a shit. And
exactly.
And yeah, so it's just they're following because you're of the moment person.
But the truth is, I do feel I have real fans. So maybe if I look at it that way, I can be like, oh, yeah, actually, that's pretty cool that I have a million hits. And really, I'm not out in the world at all. And so, yes, in that perspective is awesome, you know, but I'm still not, you know, I'm going to do stuff, but I'm going to do it. I think I have an idea how I'm going to release music and I'll let you know about that. But I feel like, yes, it has. Listen, I'll tell you this about me. I don't feel weird saying this at all, but I'm awesome. Like I'm a great performer. I'm a great singer. I can do so many things with my voice that women can't even begin to even think about. And right. I don't riff. I feel. You know, that's how I sing. I'm a feeler, you know. I don't really bother with those riffs. Those don't mean anything to me. So I'm a very different type of singer. And when I'm on that stage, I'm an incredible performer because I am a force. I'm like a fucking tree that's sitting there and just grabbing your attention. I don't need all the bells and whistles and all this other shit. I can demand and command on stage because I'm powerful that way.
I don't mean to sound, by the way, I don't mean to sound chauvinistic. It probably comes off very, I don't want it to sound misogynistic, but I apologize if it does. You're one of the few women I've heard that gives Zeppelin justice live.
Thank you.
I know it sounds shitty to say that, though.
Yeah, so man.
You know, it does sound shitty to say that.
It is, but it's true. But I think basically all I'm just trying to say is like, if I were out there, I would be glad. I'm not insecure about what I could offer. I guess I just don't know if my heart can handle it. You know, that's what happens to me. It's like, Linda, this person you see that's very confident, is also a very, very sensitive, insecure person that just can't. I'm very fragile, you know. So
you should be a sociopathic jackass like myself. It's much easier, to be honest with you. Did anyone from Zeppelin ever hear you perform a Zeppelin tune?
I think they have. I feel it was Robert Plant or Jimmy Page, but I've never heard a comment. But I'm always going, if there's anything where they need people to sing Zeppelin, please call
That's
me.
That's cool. You know? And you did I saw you do a cover with Slash, Gilby, Lizzie Hale, Matt Sorum. I forgot where that was video of.
Oh,
you
yeah,
sang,
that was a live stream of Come Together.
Come Together. That was great. That was really fun to watch. That was a really cool thing. And you mentioned Citizen Penn. That's a Sean Penn doc that's coming out, right? That's pretty wild.
Yeah, Sean Penn, when his core response went to Haiti during the earthquake, it's very intense. It's very emotional. It's really hopeful and inspirational. And I mean, talk about intense. Sean Penn is so intense. And he's got the same thing I do. It's like, you look at this man. I mean, Sean Penn's a man. He's just like got the rugged, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, right? But he's so passionate and he's so sensitive too. Like, he's like a teddy bear. Like, he's so kind and gentle and just has so much heart. I think that he's just this rugged guy, gets very mistaken for, you know, an asshole. And when really he's just very passionate. But the film is gorgeous. I'm super happy with it. That comes out on that Discovery in May 4th.
Of next year,
or May 7th,
or May 4th of this year, like a couple of weeks.
Soon, yeah.
Does that lead now to you doing scores for other movies? Are there others on the docket right now?
Listen, this is it. I'm in it. I'm in my world. Linda Perry is changing hats and starting a whole, you know, my whole career, I've been bouncing all over the place and I keep reinventing myself.
It's great.
This is what I'm doing. I love it. I'm really good at it.
And we know you have the hat for it.
I can see the Danny Elfman in you. Yeah.
Oh,
I don't believe that. Yes.
A couple of more quick questions before we wrap this up. I know you're very passionate about a new artist that you're working with, and me continuing to fuck up names. Is it Willa Ami?
Am I?
I was close. Both times.
You're really close. Willa Ami Salehi.
She's like 17, right?
Yeah. Well, she was 13 and a half when I met her. No, 12 when I met her. Soleil Moon Frye introduced me to her because her and her mom wanted to find out if she had any talent. So I went and listened to her and I was like shocked. The melodic structure, her vocals. And so I started mentoring her and we started releasing music at the end of last year. And now we're about to release an album. And yeah, it's Willa Ami. She just turned 17. She has a song called Not a Soldier out right now. Rolling Stone did a really great piece on her. She's getting some attention, but it's really hard. I need all the help you guys can give me. It's really hard to break a new artist nowadays.
Yeah, no shit.
You know, it's like, it's really hard.
Yeah, I listened to a couple of songs. I like what I heard so far. She's definitely like a cool artsy chick.
Yeah, she's got a cool style.
Yeah,
know,
definitely.
Not like any of the girls out there right now.
So now, how about this? Are there songs that you've heard in the recent past, like poppy songs or whatever, that you're like, holy shit, that is a fucking good song. Like, how did I not think of that?
I don't think that. I never think of how did I not think of that. But I did listen to that Doja Cat Say So, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. I really liked that. You know, it's like old school, you know, but it's got a cool feel. I like her, but I think I like her, you know, more than I liked the production. And then, you know, I think, you know, Cardi B does really cool stuff. I mean, I love her. I think Grimes does amazing things. Who else? Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I don't know a lot of people, but I do hear stuff and I'm like, oh, that's cool. But no, I never go, oh, I wish I thought about that. Like,
and when you did the six songs together with Dolly Parton, I mean, that was just, it looked like, I don't look, I've never met her, but she just seems like the greatest person in the world.
She is a, like an alien, like from a whole other world. There's a whole Dolly Parton planet and she is the fucking president of it. Well,
and also, you know, Ralph, remember, like, nobody co-writes with Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
And this woman did. Like, that in of itself, it blows my mind.
She also never worked with the woman before, and it was really great. Like, we became instant friends. We, like, there was such mutual respect, and she was just so kind and, again, a wonderful person because she's all about lifting people up, you know, whether, you know, you brought her coffee or, you know, brought her, you know, her new campaign deal worth $50 million. She doesn't care. She just treats everybody the same because she believes that everybody deserves a chance to be seen and shine. You
There's
know?
Never going to be another Dolly Parton. No. Like we're just lucky enough to be alive while she's still here, you know, like, yeah. But when you'd said that, like, you know, after Dolly Parton takes off all of her accoutrements that we all know to be Dolly Parton, you know, she probably looks a bit different, I would say. And you had mentioned that that's a great way to have a double life and go around. And I wondered how much of that was a joke and actually true.
No, well, I don't know. I can only speculate. You know, I'm like, God, if Dolly just changed her clothes and put her hair down. And I mean, she probably could just get away with about anything.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, but I just love her. She is just so unique and authentic. And an incredible, obviously incredible songwriter and just a person. She's just a great, great person.
What's the least Dolly Parton thing that we would think of Dolly Parton? Since, you know, because you guys talk all the time. Like what's something that would surprise us?
Uncontrollable,
honestly,
guess.
No, Dolly, she only gives you what you can put out there. Like, she's like, what's out there that people know is what Dolly lets you have. You know, so there is no Dolly breaking character, you know, and, you know, but she's really funny and really nasty, you know, but I think people know that. Like, she's just very playful and flirtatious.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Oh, you don't know. Yeah. She's really, really, she's quick. Like, that woman is quick. Like, things come flying out of her mouth.
She seems like the coolest fucking person,
you know,
in the world.
And she's an incredible, incredible business person. So I don't know if anybody knows about that, but she is very, very.
I also saw her
bring Stephen Colbert to tears recently, where she performed live on his show, and he started to, like, tear up on the show. Mm. Pretty wild.
She's fucking best, man.
Last question before we move to the first. The Songland show is kind of very similar to your show from years ago, where you're like focusing more on songwriting than on and production more than, let's say, an American Idol or a Voice. Were you asked to be part of that show at any point because it is so similar and you are such a songwriter, or did that never cross your way?
A show like that, they wouldn't dare bring to me. I mean, I'm too real. People can't handle, like, those kind of shows. They're not real. Right. You know, I'm too real. They people are scared of me. They don't want me on their television show, I'll tell you.
But at least Songland focused on writing and production versus just a pretty face with a voice.
I didn't watch it, so I don't know. I mean, okay. I'm just not into those kind of shows.
Fair enough. Okay, so let's hit the first, Shannon.
The first time ever I saw Concert Detroit.
The name of the show, as you know, is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We end the show every week with these questions, and we start with the first concert you ever went to, but on your own volition, one that you wanted to go to yourself because you wanted to go, not because someone dragged you there.
Is that the question right now?
That's the question. The first one. Which one?
Plasmatics.
Plasmatics.
Plasmatics. They're an awesome band, punk band. Wendy O. Williams. Wendy Williams. Not Wendy O. Williams. Wendy Williams. Yeah, it was Wendy O. Williams.
It was Wendy O. Williams. Wendy Williams is the
It's TV Wendy
person.
O. Williams. Yeah. She was the singer, and it was in San Diego, and it was so awesome. Like, she blew up the stage. Like,
wow.
Literally, it wasn't even like they blew up the lighting rig, and it fell onto the stage, like, for real. And
that's crazy.
I remember my parents taking me to Peter Paul.
New York.
It wasn't like that.
Yeah,
I saw them here in New York once. I used to be a DJ at a club called The Limelight, and they played there years ago.
Oh,
I
really?
I got to see them there once. And I also think Wendy O. Williams was in Playboy once for Penthouse. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And now, the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't the first drug you ever did.
Yeah, no, weed was not.
So then the first one after that.
My first drug was crystal.
First?
Oh my God. Are you kidding me? Wow.
Jesus Christ. How old were you?
I just went right to it. Pretty young. I mean, I didn't like pot. I tried it once after the fact, but I never liked it. And I was definitely doing coke, crystal, acid.
Wow.
I was in it. I was a drug addict. So, pot, I would only smoke to enhance my acid. So basically, if you take a hit of acid, you smoke pot if you want it, you know, make it, what's the word? Induce it. Like, if you want it to show up quicker.
Okay.
And if your trip goes down, you can smoke pot and it'll bring it back up. So that's
Can it be difficult to work with artists that still indulge or maybe overindulge?
Oh,
sometimes?
I don't do it now, guys.
No, I know. But if you're around people that do.
Nobody does acid anymore.
Well, no, but if you're around someone that's overindulging, period.
Listen, I'm very, honestly, lately, it just seems like people are not doing those kind of things. There were times where I've had to kick some people out of my studio a while ago, probably like 15 years ago, because they were doing drugs in my studio and wasting my time. That's exactly what happens. Right. They get kicked out. You know, it's just like, bye-bye.
It's funny. The term Quaaludes is just a funny one. You don't really hear Quaaludes anymore. I just think
they're
it's
fun. So good.
Everyone says that. I don't do drugs at all.
But
Quaaludes is like you pop one and it's like drinking like a six pack, you know.
It just sounds like such a 70s drug.
Being drunk.
It's such a great name, and anyone doing Quaaludes now, you'd be like, I don't even get them now. I don't even know.
No.
It's such a great word.
You can. Yeah, and that's why so positive you saved them.
Call me.
And now when we go to sex, I mean, I have to just say this quote about your first time having sex. This is not about that, but this is a quote from Courtney Love. I don't think I've ever been more jealous of someone in my life. Okay, here it goes. Every movie star that was bi curious and every supermodel possible, Linda Perry tapped that. The Courtney Love quote, and boy did that make me angry or excited, however you want to look at it.
It's so not true, but yes, I've had many, many lovers.
It's fine. How old were you the first time you had sex?
Okay, my first time was, just so you guys know, I've never had sex with a man. So
you're a gold star.
You're a gold star.
I've been a lesbian my whole life.
Congratulations.
And I was 15 when I made my first advances at somebody. And, you know, so I would say 15.
15. Okay, that's cool. And I've met many gold star gay men. I have not many
gold star
gay women, I think.
Gold star.
I don't know.
Maybe that's a male thing.
Yeah, meaning that you never, ever, you know, if we're involved with the other sex, is called gold star. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. See, I learned something new. Thanks, guys.
That's what we're here for.
We're all up on the gay.
That's where we bring in the research with the gay lingo. That's where we came from. And then
are we straight splaining right now? Is that what we're doing?
It's good that both Bill and I know that term. I never surprised. Yeah, it's good. All right.
Oh, one of my best friends is a gold star. Like he's very happy about it.
Yeah, I've never met a gold star lesbian. Only gold star gay men.
Hi.
Yeah. Congratulations.
I'm Linda. I'm a gold star lesbian. Nice to meet you. This is what we look like.
Well, Linda, we could hook up because most people think I'm a lesbian.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. The facial hair is the only thing that's making it not happen. All right. So the documentary, the Kid 90 is out now. Your song, The Letter, is out now as well.
Yes,
at Real Linda Perry.
Get it. And the score is out. Go get the score.
The score is out as well.
Awesome. So good. Pick up the score if you don't want to watch the movie.
We were supposed to ask you towards the end if you were going to play a song live, but I think we went late, so it's not going to happen anyway. So
I'm done with you guys.
It's been a long one. So, Bill, your plugs before we wrap this up?
Oh, yeah, just Morning with Bill and Joanne Nosajitsky, Compound Media, 10 to 11 every morning. It's a very cheap subscription. Can't afford not to do it.
Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. Shannon, do you want to put your plugs in before we wrap up, or you still don't like how you look?
It's okay. You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
You believe in ghosts, Linda?
I do sometimes.
I do sometimes. That's interesting. All right. Did I forget to plug anything, Linda, before we wrap it up, or did we nail everything?
No, you guys did amazing. A for all of you.
Oh, wow. Except Ani didn't get an A because she didn't show her face the whole time.
Ani,
so we don't give
sorry, I can't give you an A. I'll give you a D for participating in some way.
Fair enough. And we'll add the letter to the sdrshow.com/playlist as we add a new song every week. Linda, honestly, we were both, all of us were super thrilled to talk to you.
Yeah, what a pleasure.
Yeah, and your version of your 2018 like acoustic-y vibe version of What's Up was great. Loved it.
What's Up?
I'm just using the app on my phone. And I really remembered very vividly the first time I heard that song. I was actually driving and drove to a record store to buy that first record.
Amazing.
There's Ani. Ani, do your plug.
Ani, there's your plug.
Hi, everyone. Can you still hear that buzzing? I hope
it's
not.
All right. Just get it out there.
You so guys can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Ani_Moosh and check out my website at AniMooshMedia.com.
Linda Perry, thank you so much. And we'll see everyone next week on the SDR show. Peace.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye. Here I am, facing myself, peeling away emotions I felt. Wouldn't change a moment of my life. So many walked through these doors, falling through windows.
You've been listening to the SDR Show.
All right, thank you for making it through the entire episode of the SDR Show. And if you enjoyed this podcast, you're probably going to enjoy some of the other podcasts on the Gas Digital Network. And this week, we are highlighting House of Hardcore, hosted by the ECW legend, Tommy Dreamer. You can find the full catalog of episodes on demand at GasDigitalNetwork.com or catch the latest 15 episodes anywhere you find podcasts. And here's a clip of it right now.
We're talking shop. We're talking anything. Rocky Romero. Carl Anderson and Big LG Doc Gallows. He's got so many names I forget. I have him in my phone. So many different names.
Well, let's go. Let's be honest. This is the House of Hardcore podcast. I'm a House of Hardcore original on the first show. Big XLG under one of my many 37 monikers.
We forgot get about to Big XLG.
Big XLG, brother. Tommy gave me that name.
We got to get to the House of Hardcore one of these days.
Ooh, absolutely.
We almost did when we were running hot in Japan with Bullet Club, I think, weren't we? Didn't we? Almost?
Yeah, but I think we couldn't schedule it. Yeah.
COVID kind of killed that whole House of Hardcore dream. And something else we'll talk about.
COVID killed a lot of things. It's fucked, man.
When, we all grew up loving pro wrestling. And if you think about the absurdness of actually pro wrestling, here is, I'm the world heavyweight champion. I have a very expensive suit. Another man comes in, rips up my suit, and now we're going to fight till the death because of my suit. Yeah. Or even like, I hate you so much, I'm going to shave your head, brother.
Or how about, I hate you so much, I'm going to cut your nutsack off and eat it. Wow. I mean, that's the kind of
you're taking it to the extreme.
Well, that's the good thing about talking Chopamania too, right? Is like, we got all this fake stuff on there and it's all unreal. It's all scripted. It's all not real. But then we have Roll Undershed, which is the real aspect of the fight. Yeah, so this yeah, is the, that's the real part. That's what I'm excited about.
They're not shoot fights. They're hoot fights. It's our answer to Raw Underground. It's the same thing when you see a faction like Retro Poopshin make their debut. There's going to be three factions debuting on this thing. I mean, it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger all the time. And that's what makes it so exciting and so much fun. And to have people like Tommy Dreamer and Rhino and Just Incredible in the Roll Undershed, fuck, that's a backyard wrestling kid's wet dream right there. You know, I would have booked that all day long in 1998. God. Can you imagine?
There's a who's who here, man. I mean, like you just saying those three is good enough to just get.
Great.
I was such an ECW mark, dude. I used to I would get it through like UHF or like some weird channel. So I would like have to hold the bunny ears and then like go in my room and like stand like this. And then I'd watch from like so far away. It was like super fuzzy, but I like loved every second of it.
I had to do that with Florida Championship Wrestling, and that's what hooked me. If we get to, if this is successful, which I know it will be, cause we're all going to be plugging it on socials. And I know, cause that from my piece that I was there, number one, we'll talk about Rhino going so hard, preparing like it's a real match.
He almost killed Laser, my minion brother. I mean, he almost cut him literally in half. I was losing my mind.
Three times.
What you guys?
Getting frustrated. That was the best. And I'm doing alternate commentary because I see a camera and I'm just healing the hell out of him like I normally do.
Yeah, Rhino was getting frustrated with the kid he brought. But I kind of think Rhino was going I'm not saying it was Rhino's fault because I respect the legend. I just kind of think Rhino was going the wrong way, I think.
It maybe could have been.
Rhino's a particular brother, right? But you know what? Hey, he's a legend. So you know what? It wasn't his fault. It was that kid's fault.
It's like, kid. Right. Yeah, it's a clothesline with the left, brother. Remember that.
I don't mean to put myself over, but I'm so ambidextrous. I can DDT from either side. I can spear from either side, but apparently that's why the spear and the gore are different. It can only happen from one side.
Hey, that's why it's Rhino. I feel the gore and the spear are different.
But here's the other thing, guys. That's my backyard, and I filmed some Sex Ferguson stuff just for like Patreon out there, and I fell down. And that's not like, I know
there's rocks out there.
Precautions. There's rocks out there. And I was watching it back because I wasn't here, which we can talk about later. I was driving me nuts, but he's just cutting these brothers in half. And I mean, these aren't world-renowned pro wrestlers per se. These are either up-and-comers or hobbyists, friends of ours. And I'm like, fuck, Rhino's going to kill somebody in my backyard. There's no way they signed a waiver.
Hey, well, you could say like in the boner yard match, though, I knocked you down and you fell down on a boulder, right? But he no sold it because everybody was around watching. He didn't want to show any pain or tears. He said he laid there and was going,
I couldn't walk for a week properly. Like
he landed on a rock that was like a sword
just pierced into my body.
That's when you get up and you do the old man, you pull up your pants a little bit and you say, I'm right back. I'm going to make a phone call.
You couldn't even get up.
Oh, God.
I heard the one guy when Rhino gored him, he went,
Yeah, his life was leaving his body.
It might have been Rhino, too.